Ah, you found me hula dancing on a Thursday evening right here in the great Northwest. And welcome to Caching in the Northwest. This is the only podcast dedicated to geocaching in the great Pacific Northwest. We're going to talk about caches and cachers unique to this little corner of the continent. So while you're looking in the couch cushions for lemonade money, we'll be caching in the Northwest. And you know, we can't do that until we bring in our scripting sensei. Some say he's so sharp his wit can carve pumpkins. And others say he's more diverse than Justin Trudeau's socks. All we know is he's called Kev MacD.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, thanks for joining me tonight. This is going to be a lot of fun. We are going to talk about challenge checkers. And I don't think we're talking about a board game, right?
No, that would be challenge chess. No,
we got challenge checkers. Chess, yes. Ah, nice. Hey, a quick reminder that we appreciate the support of all of our patrons who help keep this podcast coming each and every week. If you want to know more about supporting the show, I might have had too much caffeine, but sometimes I talk fast and it's really hard to tell anyway. If you want to know more about supporting the show, click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website. So, Kev MacD, you've been on the show before. This is not your first time on Caching in the Northwest.
It's not, and thanks. It's great to be back.
Yeah.
We've got some fun stuff to talk about tonight.
Exactly. And one of the fun things we like to talk about each and every week is the glow. You wrote it or whether you read it, we want to hear about it because great logs simply make geocaching better. Send an email to feedback@cachingnw.com. Call in to 253-693-TFTC or use the voicemail tool right there on the website and show us how you glow, because we like hearing the glow in your very own voice. It sounds good. We have a glow from Team Finn. They found GC7 Hotel 778. It's a WSGA PS 2017 holiday party cache. That sounds fun just to go find it, just by the name. Let's see, there are six letters there in a row. We got the Washington State Geocaching Association Puget Sound chapter. It's not there. But, you know, we just stick all the letters together and it makes it more fun. Okay.
It's kind of an alphabet challenge in itself, really.
It really is, isn't it? With a last name like mine, I learned the alphabet quickly. And, I don't have many of these letters actually in my name. So anyway, Team Finn writes, as usual, we took the hard way to the cache. Parking was simple. Getting there, not so much. We headed east towards the lake and wilderness area, then headed north towards the trail. We have to get to that paved trail down there. Okay, easy enough. We just need some kind of path. We found a cleared path. Although a little steep, it was doable. Sherpa Bob ran down, literally and very quickly, and I tossed the Team Finn geobag to him. Well, I say tossed. It was more of a direct throw. My throw was a little short, and the bag ended up landing on the ground about 3 feet in front of Sherpa Bob. A lady running on the trail ran right by as this whole thing happened, and made sure to tell us to be careful. I made it down, and then we made it over to Ground Zero. A nice quick find was waiting for us down there, so I guess it was worth it. After signing the log, we turned around and saw a very useful set of stairs. We walked them up them to discover how much of a shorter walk this would have been and how much easier a descent would have been. Oh, well, Team Finn makes their own terrain ratings. Nice. Oh, I can't tell you the number of times I've done that bushwhack into a cache only to find a nice trail coming out.
I used to have a shirt like that, Chris.
Well,
found trail on way out.
Oh, I like that. That could be the new slogan for caching in the Northwest. Found the trail on the way out. You know,
I know the glow I'm going to send in now, and it's about finding the trail on the way out. I'll send that to you.
Okay, do that. And you know what? You could be like Kev MacD and send us a glow about finding a trail on the way about, or anything that you happen to come across. Now, maybe it's not even a log that you wrote, but, you know, while looking for the cache, you're frustrated. You look at other logs and you come across one that makes you chuckle. Send that one to us, too. We want to hear about it. Oh, found the trail on the way out. Love it. Hey, we got some feedback this week. I know you won't believe it, but we did. This one comes to us from Cacheosaurus. Says, I wish to simply say thank you. I really enjoy your podcast, the pace, the content, the humor, and the hosts. Really enjoy it. So he's thank you, and please keep it up. Well, thank you, Cacheosaurus. We appreciate you. You know, we do this just because we have fun at it. And if you enjoy it, that's great to hear. We also have a little bit of news this week. It's a busy week. Geocaching.com has a brand new trackable contest. This one is from Treasure X, which seems rather appropriate for a geocaching treasure hunt, right? Let's see. From geocaching.com/treasurex, it reads, geocaching.com will randomly choose 3,000 people to receive trackables. United States, United Kingdom, Australia, I really wish Land Monkey was here, Canada, and the Nordic countries, where actually Land Monkey is right now. Any of those countries can participate. 300 lucky participants in the U.S. will be randomly selected to also receive a Treasure X toy in the mail. Now, about the new exciting scavenger hunt toy, Treasure X. I need an echo effect when I say that.
X, 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 X.
It's like X minus one, right?
X, 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 X.
Search for the, here's the bit about the Treasure X toy. Search for real gold dipped treasure through 10 levels of adventure. Treasure X is the ultimate surprise reveal collectible with multi-layered reveal process, cool figures, and a chance to find real treasure. Rip, fizz, and chip away to reveal the layers and discover the secrets hidden within. Will you be the hero that finds the real gold, or will you end up with the booby prize? Looking at this, it looks like it's in the, there's a figure inside a block of material. And you've got to get down, you know, to that figure. And it sounds like there are 10 different layers to dig through.
Wow.
So I don't know how big this thing is to come through, or is it, you know, something small, but it's a boy version of dolls. Yeah, well, kind of. I got my son, it was a knight, and it was in like some clay, some hardened clay. It came with a little plastic hammer that you had to break the clay away from the knight. It was a pewter knight, so you were uncovering it and chipping away. And I see this as similar. He got frustrated and wanted the real hammer and just to do it in like three blows. And I'm like, well, that's not the whole point of this. It's to teach patience, son.
And yeah, not crush the figure in.
Exactly. Sledgehammer, one shot, we're done.
Limax says the X sounds more like Dimension X. One of my favorite radio programs, by the way.
Yes.
X, 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 X.
I don't remember which one came first. There was X minus one and Dimension X, and
Dimension X came first. The X minus one was sort of the redo after Dimension X had gone off the air.
Okay. LOL dolls. So I don't know what LOL dolls are. They're about the same thing with different layers. They're about the same size as a waffle ball or wiffle ball, says Keepers of the Cash Flow. Interesting. Dora Moore wants to know, I wrote a log recently that simply said, I don't want to talk about it. Is that a glow? You know, that's the response, yes, I'm looking for right there, Kevin. If it, yes, makes you laugh, yes, it's worthy of a glow. So there you go. It doesn't have to be long. Okay. Kev MacD, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do as a geocaching volunteer?
Well, as a volunteer, I do GSAC seminars. I do introduction to geocaching seminars. I've recently joined the board of the BC Geocaching Association, which I understand caching in the Northwest is working with. So there's a number of events coming up throughout the year I'll be participating in. And I'm a Project GC challenge checker author. So I participate in the community by helping write challenge checkers.
Nice. And we're not talking like, you know, king me and jump the, we already made
that. Not checkers, not chess either. So no rooking.
So it's not like speed checkers. That's a challenge checker.
A little bit different. Challenge caches, right? So a cache that you not only have to find, but that you have to fulfill the requirements for before you can log. And that can be quite simple. Probably the most commonly known ones. People talk about Jasmer or the 365 streak challenge, or they talk about Fizzy. Another popular one is the ABC checker, where you have to find a cache that starts with every letter of the alphabet. So you find an alpha cache and a beta cache, 26 caches. Now, it can be quite a job.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out if you qualify.
And I know there are people that specifically put out a cache that starts with the letter X. It could be, you know, X minus one or X dimension. Since we threw that out, I know I turned it around, but we have to have the letter X to start it off with.
I actually have three caches that are X, Y, and Z, which is the Canadian version of Z after exchange.
After exchange. Oh, I love it.
And I created those three caches just so people could do their ABC challenges or help them along.
So do you see that you get more fines on those caches because of the challenge involved with them?
A lot of the logs seem to say so. Like, wow, okay, this was great. You know, three difficult letters to find sometimes for the first letter of a cache and all together on the same little trail.
I was going to say, what if we did a power trail of 26 caches?
If we did, kind of
fun out of it, right?
Yeah. And unfortunately, in the new world and the new challenge rules world, you can't create a challenge based on the name of a cache anymore.
Oh.
And just thanks to Brian Lang for the help with that. I was checking with him this afternoon. Yeah, that's definitely out.
Interesting. So, what kind of geocaches do you prefer to find? Since you do challenge checkers, is that primarily what you're looking for? Kind of the puzzles and the challenges?
Oh, I love puzzles. Always been sort of a favorite of mine. The puzzles, great winter activity, great, wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning, can't sleep activity. Love doing puzzles. Recently, geo art has been a lot of fun. I did my entire Hidden Creatures based on geo art.
Really?
Magic Hat series and a treble clef series. 80 somewhat caches in the one and 25 caches in the other, and went from Bigfoot to World Turtle in a day and a half.
That's amazing. And you know, I appreciate the geo art artist. Is that the correct term?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Artist?
I feel like I'm repeating.
Geo-artist. Yeah. But, I've worked on a piece of geo-art. It's a lot of work.
Exactly. Now, did you lay it out in a grid to get the, spacing just right? Or did you just kind of freehand your geocache locations?
Yeah, freehand.
Okay.
Put them on Google Maps, actually, and then pulled the coordinates from there.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so when you're doing something like that, we're getting off topic. I realize
that. Sorry.
But we're only going to do this quickly and then we're going to move on. When you're doing something like that, do you just look for a big empty space and then put the coordinates back, the found coordinates, where you want to put the hides?
Yeah, there's a requirement that the physical cache not be more than a certain distance from where the icon goes. So you kind of got to do some juggling. You have to find some trails that, I guess it depends how many icons your art has. You know, if you're doing the letter I, you probably only need 4 caches. but a lot of geo art has 25, 30, 50, 60, 80 caches. And the finals all have to be within a certain distance of the icon. And that's the challenge, is making sure that the icons that are the furthest left are associated with the caches that are the furthest left, and making sure that all the distances don't exceed. So there's a lot of time spent just doing that juggling.
Brian Lang throw in there says a certain distance is 2 miles or 3.2 kilometers.
There we go. I couldn't remember the exact number. Thanks, research department.
Exactly. Thank you, research department. I was pretty sure it was 2 miles, but I want to say that's relatively recent in the whole, you know, history of geocaching. It used to be that you could do a challenge and put it wherever. But
it is relatively recent in the last 4 years or so that caches have to have, you know, they have to be within a certain distance of each other. I believe, and we can ask the research department here as well, that it's even a little less lenient for GeoArt than it is for, say, a puzzle.
Mm. Well, apparently I'm wrong, because the 2 mile limit has been in place for well over 10 years.
There we go.
Which is, you know, just about half of the time that geocaching's been around. So
there we go. And, you thanks know, again, research department.
And I don't do math well, so. No, I actually do math well. So 18 years it's been around, 10 of those at least. But okay, that's enough. Let's get back on topic. We don't have Land Monkey pulling us back in.
All right. So
I'm going to have to play Land Monkey tonight. No, you should. I Land Monkeyed you. I did the Land Monkey introduction for you.
Chris, focus. Back on topic.
Oh, you're good. I like this. Okay. So this whole show, we're focusing on challenge checkers. Can you tell us what a challenge checker is?
Yeah, we were talking about challenges where you have to find the cache, but you also have to meet the requirements, and you have a certain number of caches that you have to find. Sometimes it's 365 caches in a row. Manually, that can be a big job. It can be a big job for the cacher to go back through their logs and figure out if they've got all their Fizzy or the Jasmer, but also for the cache owner who may want to verify that you're not just pulling one over, and you got to go back through all their logs. So challenge checker, this happened in the challenge caches went kind of offline for a period. They came back. The guidelines have been changed. You must now have a web-based challenge checker. In fact, a computer program that will do it for you so that the cacher and the cache owner can verify it. Project GC is the one that's mentioned in the requirements, in the guidelines. It allows you to basically put in the GC code of a challenge and the name of a geocacher, and it will come back and say, yes, you qualify, no, you don't qualify. Typically, it will tell you a little bit about which caches it used to determine you did qualify, and it would also point out if there's some gaps. So anybody should be able to go in there and do that, pull up a challenge cache and put in a name and say, yes, I do qualify, or no, I don't.
And it's really nice because, of course, you want to put in your name first. But say you and I are going to go out caching and we're going to go hit, I'm going to pull up the challenge bear. You mentioned GeoArt. There's the whole, a whole bear. Is it in Kamloops?
It's a bear chasing a stick man.
Yeah. Where is that? I've forgotten.
I believe that is Kamloops. The research department will pop in here.
I seem to remember Kamloops. So we want to go and hit that in one day, and it's really nice that, Kelowna.
Kelowna. Thanks, Keats.
Thank you. I could put in my name, I can put in your name and say, hey, look it, we qualify for all these, let's go get them.
Perfect.
So you don't have to do it just for your own name. You can do it for anybody else that you're going out with.
That you're going out with, or if you have a challenge cache, you can now make sure that the people logging it qualify for it.
That's right. And I've used that. I've used those several times on Project GC. It's really nice for the Delorean map pages that I'm kind of working on now, or there's Know Your Local Cacher is one that I've gone and checked on, you know, find, I think it's three different types of caches from three different hiders. And, you know, that's a hard one to figure out, because you look back and some of these are, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old that, you know, it would take a long time to manually go through your list and find these, but you can click a button and in no time it tells you if you qualified or not. So let's say I wanted to make a challenge, but it was slightly different than what's already out there. Can I learn to create and edit challenge checkers?
Absolutely, you can. Project GC, they hide it a little bit, but if you do find the section on becoming a challenge checker author, they basically say email the support group. And if you go to the Project GC page up in the top right, there's a fairly big button that says email support. And just tell them you want to become a challenge checker author. They will send you all the documentation, a pile of links to references to the languages, and they send you a handy little quiz. And they basically ask that you
there's a test do
a little bit of reading. There's a test. If you want to write your own, there's actually a test involved. Now, if you want someone to write it for you, that's great. There's a pile of geeks. I'm one of them. You go onto the forum and you put your GC code of your unpublished cache. You describe the requirements. If there's another cache that's similar, or even if it's exactly the same, make reference to that other cache, and one of us will go online and create the checker for you.
Interesting.
So it really depends on your interest. If you're not a geek, it can be done for you. And if you really have an interest, you can become part of the team as well.
So I want to verify something here, Kevin. A group of programmers is technically called a pile of geeks?
Well, yes, that's very much the technical term.
Okay.
There's actually a few group nouns, I believe. A pile of geeks, you know, a bunch of nerds. The list goes on. I'm sure it'll pop up in chat. Some other
a herd of nerds.
A herd of nerds.
Oh, excuse me. So I'm going to go out and cough.
I'm going to tap dance while Chris coughs.
I want to see it.
You want to see me dance?
Mm-hmm.
No, nobody wants to see that. I actually make a lot of money as a singer. People don't know this, but every time I sing, people pay me to shut up.
Really? I do the same thing in my choir. Yeah, you know, the choir director pays me to stay out of the choir.
Yeah, that's perfect. There's no choir practice.
Yeah.
None of that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to create a challenge cache, they have to make their own checker, or they can use one of the many piles of geeks?
That's correct. They can do either one.
Now, how do you go about requesting a challenge checker? I mean, that seems to me like somebody's really going out of their way to help you. What do they get out of it? I mean, why would you want to make a challenge checker for me?
Well, you talked about volunteering, and it is a type of volunteerism. It's giving back to the community and getting back the knowledge that you're helping the community. I don't think any of this is unique to geocaching. It's part of volunteering. I think there's a great satisfaction in helping whatever community you're a part of.
So I'm going to go create a challenge cache. I'm going to toss it out to the pile of geeks. How do I know that what I'm proposing is even feasible? Say the ABC challenge, which you say you can't do anymore.
Well, that's the interesting part about the pile of geeks, is they're going to tell you right away that you can't do that.
Okay.
First of all, one of the big changes that happened in the you know, when challenge caches came back, was the idea that it had to be verifiable through statistics available on geocaching.com. So there are really only a few situations that are disallowed. You know, you would be able to do it with the data from geocaching.com, But there's only a few situations where they say, except you cannot do this. You cannot create a challenge based on the name of a cache. You cannot create a challenge based on the text in a cache, that sort of thing. So, that's part of what you learn becoming a checker. And, people will just say, you know, we're not going to do it because it's not going to be published.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much if you don't have a challenge checker, if the geeks refuse to write your challenge checker, it's not publishable.
Oh, so do you have to have programming programming skills to accomplish this? I assume you have some mad programming skills.
Well, I've been called mad a few times, but not generally in that context. You do have to have some sort of scripting or programming skills, or it's going to be a bit of a challenge. Oh, there's that word again. It's going to be a bit of a challenge for you to do it. It requires some use of a language called Lua. It's a scripting language, and the data interchange format called JSON, which is JSON, not the land monkey type JSON.
Lua sounds very Hawaiian.
Portuguese word for moon.
Oh.
So actually, I think we're all giving you the moon as we're, oh, that's, sorry.
Wait, you're being mooned as you're creating this.
That's right.
Yes. Okay. So without going into too much technical detail, we may add that for the after show. Could you, in fact, we're going to go through a basic Lua programming course in the after show. So you all want to stick around.
Right. Yeah. And there's a quiz right after.
Yeah. And a test, and it shouldn't take any more than 6 hours.
Right. So everybody go to the bathroom now.
Yeah. No, not now.
Oh, wait. As soon as we do FATAS.
There you go. Could you walk us through an example of creating one of these challenge checkers?
Sure. So a challenge checker has two parts to it. It has a script and it has a tag. The script part is the Lua language. And within the environment that you're working in, you have access to all of the different geocaching.com data. So I can say, bring up cache in the Northwest. I want to see all the caches that they found. And then I create a loop over those caches, most likely, and I try and see if, you know, the correct number of them meets the challenge. And I'm going to run that against a number of people. So I might pull people I think should have it, and I'm going to pull people I think shouldn't have it, and away we go. So that's the script, and we try and make that as flexible as possible. I'll come back to that in a minute. The second part is the tag, and the tag really takes that piece of code, if you will, and associates it with a particular GC code, with a particular geocache. And the nice part of that is we can now reuse the code for other caches that have the same requirements. Don't need to rewrite the code for every cache. I can just create a tag that says, you know, here's a 365 streak challenge, which is when you find caches day after day for 365 days. It has nothing to do with taking your clothes off. I just want to be clear about that. I know it's disappointing.
In the winter, that gets really challenging.
Yeah, particularly in the Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
But once you create a streak checker, you might pass in a parameter that says, well, how many days do you want to streak for? And, you know, then it handles hundreds of different types of challenges that are involved in streaks. You may want to put in another parameter that says, how do you want to handle leap day in your streak? Does your streak have to include a leap day? That's just an example of how you might create the script. And then you would program the tag to say, for this particular cache, you only need 180 days of the streak, for example. And so there are the two parts. So when you're creating a challenge checker, actually the first thing that you do is see if somebody else has already written the script. If somebody's already written the script, you need to create the tag, and the tag might take 20 minutes once the script is written. Yeah. So it can be very, very quick. Someone says, I need a challenge checker for this cache. Here's the requirements. You go, I know there's a script. I just create the tag, and away you go.
Limex says, with the script, you can say, find a streak of 180 caches that are all ape caches.
That's correct. Yeah, you can add another parameter there saying, I want a streak and I only want to do a certain type of cache or certain types of cache. Or in fact, you can say, I want to do streak for every cache type, but a traditional. So if you built this, the script to be able to take those parameters, absolutely.
Okay. So you've created the script, you've created a tag. Then what?
Then the person who's creating the challenge, or maybe we're creating a checker for an old challenge, just adds it to their webpage. They may want to test it a bit. They may want to go through the same process of saying, you know, here's some people I think don't qualify, and oh, look, they don't qualify in the script, and some that do, and it does, you know, to make sure that it's correct, to make sure that the script writer understood your requirements. And of course, they have to run it on their own self, because to publish a challenge cache, you must qualify.
Yes, that's a big one. And yeah. You must qualify, and it has to be reasonable, right? Like, you can't find 180 ape caches.
Well, I think as long as the cache owner has done it.
Oh, there you go. That's true. That's true.
Right? So since there are only two at the moment, that would be difficult. And well, there was only, 18 originally. So
I was going to say, what if I found 9 of the 18 and I say, here, I can put out a challenge because I qualify of finding 9 ape caches.
Well, I think we'd have to go back to the research department, but I believe that the challenge must also be achievable. So if there are only 2 and you must find 9, technically you would be able to write the script and make the checker out of it. But you know, you're going back to the basics of you can't publish a challenge that nobody new can qualify for. And that's an important part as well. You must be able to start caching today and be able to qualify for a challenge.
There you go. That's what I was looking for. Okay. Well, great. So I think I should do one of a streak of, well, what's my biggest streak? Like 13 days. So put out a challenge. If anybody's cached more than 13 days in a row, they can go find this.
Yeah. Or, you know, you could do something like a streak of Wednesdays. Still waiting for a challenge cache like that. Like, how many Wednesdays in a row have you, have you got a streak for? There's a whole new idea.
Yeah. So, and that's easy enough to find in your geocaching stats because it's a fine date. So you can work with that.
Yes.
Interesting. What other interesting ideas have you come up with?
For geocache challenges? Oh, I don't. you know, there's definitely some alternates out there. You hear about double fizzy and triple fizzy, that sort of thing. Again, the script, you would just say, how many times do you have to do fizzy before you qualify?
Well, if you're dealing with rock chalk, what is he, 20 or 30 times fizzy?
It doesn't count if you catch the same cache twice, though, isn't it? Like,
oh,
rock chalk, he'll go back and he'll go out and find caches again just for the fun of it.
Yeah. He is quite the caching machine, though. But yeah, there you go.
In town here recently, as a matter of fact. Up here in Vancouver not long ago caching, logging some of my caches, which was kind of fun.
Nice. But,
so yeah, there's, I see in the chat that there are a whole pile of challenges popping up or about to pop up.
Yes, by Hayek.
Just retired. Hayek, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the local cachers, quite prolific, is sort of half retiring from caching for various reasons. And a lot of his caches are up for adoption. And Hayek took a bunch of them and is turning them into challenges. So they're going to become Challenge Central up there.
Nice. Now, it's up to the cache owner to determine if the finder has met the qualifications for the challenge cache, correct?
Yes, that's correct. The cache owner needs to verify that. Often the requirements are you have to post a list of the caches that you used to qualify, or you have to create a list. If you're a premium geocacher, you can create a list of all of those. Those are common requirements. I think that might drop off now, though. That was a way of getting the cacher to do the homework. But again, Project GC, most of the scripts will output the caches that are used. So copy and paste.
Yeah, exactly. And that is so much easier. And I believe also when you run Project GC and it outputs. It also includes a link back to that challenge checker. So if you copy that, put it in your log, the next person coming along can say, oh, I can go use this. And it creates a handy tool for the next cache finder to use, or, you know, pointer for the next cache finder to use to go see if they qualify.
And that's an interesting point that you bring up. The cache owner should probably put that link on their cache page, but the cache owner isn't the only one that can create or request a checker, particularly with obviously challenges that existed before the rule change. Anybody can say, will you create a checker for this challenge? And the cache owner may not add it to their page. So that's great to have that link where people can go back and use the challenge checker.
And well, so yeah. I'm thinking of the older, I don't know, I don't want to use the term grandfathered challenges, but, you know, the existing challenges that were in place before Project GC was the requirement, there were some that may or may not have had a checker. And, you know, perhaps checkers have come out since the cache was published. And so you've got things like that where I've went through and looked and go, I have no idea if I qualify. But looking through the logs, I go, oh, well, there's a link to a Project GC. I'm going to go find it. Yeah.
And the research department is, Brian, once again, saying you do not have to post your qualifications for challenge caches anymore because the requirement that there be a challenge checker is built in. So if anybody questions, they just go to the challenge checker and verify.
So there you absolutely. Go.
But again, the older ones often don't have a challenge checker and they still have the requirement that you must post the caches. So, right. And those ones, I think, properly would be called grandfathered.
IHAM is suggesting pre-prohibition challenges.
Oh, there we go. So different types of alcohol you've consumed while caching.
Pre-prohibition, yes.
Yeah. And, nice. You know, there's a great series up here called Skunk Tales, which talks a lot about sort of semi-fictionally, but based on reasonable fact as well about Canada's role in rum running during American Prohibition.
Oh, interesting.
There you go. Takes you down into the tunnels underground.
Ooh. The underground tunnels across the border, which it would bring in the rum?
And that would be the idea where you could load the rum onto the ships or get them off the ships without you know, people inspecting the cargo. And of course, somebody's got to bring up Sea Hag. Thanks for that. Thanks. Thanks. Sea Hag 1. How many years has it been? 3.5. It's not been found.
Is that one of the caches on that challenge?
It's not a challenge. It's just a series.
Okay.
Yes, it is. And it's been out for three and a half years, I believe. And, it's not far. It's not like the last one I think we were talking about where the crew hiked for 12 hours to find it. This is in the city on a shoreline. And you would think after all the hours spent looking for it would be found, but yet to be discovered.
Interesting. It reminds me of during Gigastock, there was a geocache. It was just an evil nano on a tree. And, you know, it hadn't been found in, I want to say, 3.5 years. And, you know, you get enough hands going over that tree, you're eventually somebody's going to find it. So when we were there, there had to be 20 or more people, you know, trying to find it. And it was just kind of like a duct tape envelope pushed between the bark.
Yep. I know the kind that you mean.
Yeah.
And this must be something like that. Three Hams in a Rose in chat says he spent 11 hours looking for Sea Hag. I know personally I spent over 8. When Planetary Pursuit was on, I held the Uranus event, which we'll just skip over. And after that, there was, I don't know, it had to be 15 or 20 people that spent 2 hours more out looking for that cache. And there's a lot of people who just say, I'm not going out there anymore. It will be the find of the century if someone does find it.
Keith says, hashtag ignore list.
In Nordlist, yes. Yeah. Wow. The area that it's in, it's a walk across mud, and the mud has quite a unique aroma.
Oh, odoriferous mud.
Yes, very odoriferous mud. Yeah.
So. That's never a lot of fun.
But that would be your, you know, prohibition cache, not necessarily challenge. But
wow. Interesting. Does the cache owner verify that it's still there?
He has several times, yes.
Okay.
And he's a cacher, although he's a bit of a prankster. Mm-hmm. He's a respected cacher of the community and volunteer. So, we have to sort of believe that it's there.
Okay. Interesting. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining me this evening. Will you stay around for the after show?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, great. Going back to that CHAG cache, Three Ham says the CO revels in the attention that he gets.
Yes, and Keats makes a comment about the smell of the mud, which is, you'll have to join and watch the chat.
Well, everybody should go experience it. Well, again, thank you. Now, next week,
thanks, Chris.
Coming right back here, don't go anywhere else. We're going to have a Baltic Cruise geocaching adventure recap with none other than the Traveling Land Monkeys.
No.
Apparently, they're going to be here. I have it on good word that they're coming back. After having, they probably found 1,000 caches in each country. Just, you know, because that's what they do. And then the week after that, that's August 2nd, is Getting Started. That's a series we're doing on helping new cachers get going in geocaching. And we're going to talk about grandfathered caches, such as virtuals and webcams. You're going to want to listen to that one. We also want to thank our faithful Denali level supporters. That's Bounce Bounce, Team Squirrel, Limax, and World Caching. If you want to know more about supporting the show, click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website. And we want to thank all levels of supporters. That's B Pendragon, Broncos Fan for Life, Sprouter, Camp Clan, Tick Magnet, Kev MacD, Subway Mark, Dora Moore, Dune Buddy, Kid Vegas 19, GeoNav Pros, Wino Seattle, AcroDoc, OBX Geek, Billy Robson, G-Niece, Antaeus, Keats 94, Curiosity Girl, Trexer Zero, and a brand new one just this week is MC3 Cats. So, Kevin, if people wanted to stalk you online and perhaps get tips on creating challenge checkers and how to do great gadget caches, how can they find you?
My caching profile, Kev_MacD, or you can email me at kevin@geekfrog.ca.
A geek frog.
Kind of like leapfrog, but geekier than that.
Oh, much geekier than leapfrog. Hey, you can always follow me at CachingNW on Facebook or Twitter, or head on over to CachingNW.com/hosts, read the bios, and find a couple of links that I just mentioned and some secret ones that we don't tell anybody else about. But most of all, we want to say thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Caching in the Northwest. Don't forget that you can be part of the show. You can call 253-693-TFTC, leave a comment, ask a question, help us with a challenge checker any time of the day or night. And of course, you can always email us at feedback@cachingnw.com. Don't forget that your support helps keep the quality shows coming. If you like this show, click that Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. This show is produced by Chris Umfenauer and Jay Kennedy, hosted by Chris, Jay, and Jim Paulwitz. The show's licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, copyright 2018 by Chris Umfenauer. And folks, I ask you to stay tuned for the after show. And guess what? We're officially in
the after show. X.
That's what you want to hear, isn't it? Oh, I just I had gone through X minus one. That was the first one I came across. I had gone through all those shows. So I had to go out and find was it just this week? Yeah. A new old time radio sci-fi series. And I haven't started it yet, but it has Dimension X and it has a couple of others.
So what are these recordings or is this a radio station? Or?
It's a podcast of the old recordings. Yeah.
Yeah. I purchased my vehicle. I got Sirius.
Okay.
Radio, satellite radio in my car. And there's a whole station that just does old time radio.
Oh, nice.
Dragnet and all the old shows, the Green Hornet. It's amazing.
Dimension X, X minus one. That's all it says. Theater X-5. Five. I don't know. I can't get the details I'm looking for right there, but it's several different ones. What got me all started in this is the normal radio station that I was using for my FM transmitter. I have a Bluetooth FM receiver in the car that transmits on the FM so I can play my phone on my stereo, you know, because I don't have one of those new fangled cars that you can plug your phone in and have it come through the stereo. I have to go the old way. The standard radio station that I had been using that wasn't a blank one day suddenly came on with old time radio. I'm like,
awesome.
Where did this come from? Oh, I like this. And so I started listening to it for several months. And the one show that got me hooked was The Adventures of Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar, yeah. Man with the fabulous expense account.
The man with the action-packed expense account. Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That one got me hooked. And so I started listening to old time radio, which is fun.
Got a bunch of recordings of that. I'll send them down to you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
probably anyway. Have 20 or 25 hours of Johnny Dollar.
It's great, isn't it? I've listened the one podcast I'm listening to, the guy is from Idaho. And I've got to run into him sometime somewhere. I'm looking for him.
He's the guy that does the show on Sirius too.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Now I have to go look, find out his show name. The Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. With Adam Graham.
Oh, that's not the guy I'm thinking of, but all right. Yeah.
Okay. He does several, Dragnet, Johnny Dollar and others that I can't remember because I'm only listening to Johnny Dollar at the moment. But I was surprised how many actors were Johnny Dollar. How many voice actors?
Five.
I'm on the third one already. The first one lasted a long time. Then there was a brief second one. And then they jumped into the third. So
and he lasts. I think the last one only hangs around for a year or something after that one season. But great, great series for sure.
Yeah. A lot of fun. There you go. There's my old time radio addiction. Oh, okay. And we have some FATAS items. In case you don't know, the after show is something we do after we've talked about the main topic. And we could talk, who knows, about old time radio or something even related to geocaching.
Or related to the topic of the evening. It could be really surprising.
It really could be. If you're listening live, jump in the chat and use the hashtag FATAS. That's for the after show. I'll copy those out as we go along and put them in the show notes so we don't forget to mention them. Like the one from IHAM who says, Monkey Cakes and I filled in another square on our Jasper grid last weekend. Only 8 to go. So
for this, for Jasper, I don't know if people are following along at the home version of this game, but finding a cache from every month since 2000. Now that's the place date for the cache.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So it involves you going to Utah to find Potter's Pond, which I can't remember the date, but I want to say there are only two or three geocaches left in existence that work on those dates. Potter's Pond in Utah is the closest one to us here in the Northwest.
So yeah, it's not a get in your car and be done the challenge overnight type thing. Definitely, no. It's going to involve a little bit of travel.
Exactly.
There's quite a number of caches involved in the Jasmer as well. So yeah, you gotta get on there and find them and do some geocache road trips.
Hashtag geocache road trips.
Hashtag. Yeah.
Sorry, it was a Land Monkey thing. And you know, the longer it takes you to get into geocaching, the more caches you have to find, right? Or the longer it takes you to complete this challenge, the more caches you have to find. So, I was talking with IHAM and I said, well, you know, maybe I'll go along. Maybe we'll make it a caching in the Northwest road trip to Potter's Pond and back.
There we go.
Get enough drivers. It's an easy thing. You can just, you know, hit it. IHAM says four caches from August 2000. Potter's Pond is on our calendar for early fall.
And somebody says that there's 48 DNF, including me. It's not good.
On Potter's Pond? I don't think so. There's a traditional next to Beverly, the third oldest cache in Chicago that has more than a year old and is still an FTF available.
There we go.
That's that came from Stark Cacher. That's GC787 Papa 5.
Of course, some of the other people in chat and Land Monkey, Mrs. Monkey, they went on quite a hike and got a 4-year old FTF.
From yes, they PCGA, did.
Cache events that got put out and never found. And quite the thing, that's for sure.
Quite the thing. That was quite the hike. I mean, that wasn't just, hey, let's go do this because I'm bored this weekend.
No, that required some planning. And I think a lot of Land Monkey's advice on what to carry when you cache out in the backcountry.
Yeah. Exactly. Hey, look at that. We have a Wits End.
Did I miss
anything? Thanks for joining us in the after show.
Did I miss anything?
No.
We're just about to start.
Can you guys back up and start over?
Yeah. Well, actually, Kevin is just going to start a course on teaching us LOA, programming language.
Oh,
that's right. It's 6 hours, so now is the time to go do your bio break.
Okay.
And there's a quiz at the end.
Yeah.
Well, there was always a quiz at the end.
I'm glad you did join us. That's awesome.
Oh, Monkey dinner. Cake says they already have their plane tickets to Utah. They're not driving.
No. Surprise.
Oh, yeah. Why would they fly to Utah?
Geocachers behind you.
There are a couple, yeah.
We were talking about Jasmer and the Potter's Cache that you need to find to be able to finish that in our area.
Oh, yeah. I do remember IHAM talking about trying to get that one.
They've already got plane tickets to go to Utah in the fall.
You can drive there, you know.
That's what I was thinking.
You can walk there if you have time, but who has that kind of time?
Well, apparently there's a young man. I don't remember where. I don't know if they said where. His car broke down. It was a 45-minute drive to work. And he said, well, I still got to get to work. So he popped up his cell phone and found out it was a 7-hour walk and walked to work that day.
Huh. You know,
so got there just in time to go home.
No, he actually got there, you know, for the start of the shift. And his boss found out that, you know, his car broke down and he walked. His boss gave him his car. He said, here's the keys to my car. You take it.
Wow.
Works for a bellhop company.
Nice.
I'm thinking, wow, you know, you can't buy advertising like that.
Nope.
Well, hey, I'm sorry I missed the meat of the show. It sounds I was looking forward to this one. So, but here it is. And yeah, I know it doesn't look like I'm here. No, this is my normal spot.
That's right. IHAM says there. No gym background.
Okay, yeah. Here should I? Yeah. Well, so usually I kill this light. Here, I'll give the after show peeps a little.
Oh, taste. You get a behind the scenes view into Wits End Studio here.
Hang on, to do this string here.
It's FTAS BTS.
Oh, there you go. So that comes down, and then this comes down.
A series of pulleys.
Yeah.
And there's a backdrop.
There. Is that better?
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, now I'm getting seasick, though.
Yeah, it'll settle down. Hang on.
Okay. Limax says your garage door is probably still open. No, not today.
Not today.
It was a little chilly today. Dormore thinks it's awesome. Good job.
Oh, thank you.
There you go. Instant studio. And you look at it and you go, well, that looks wonderful. You know, you get the right lighting, simple backdrop.
Oh, and this too. Hang on.
Is the stop sign new? No, I don't think so. I don't think the Disney stop sign is new.
No, that's one of the oldest pieces, actually.
Yeah. Is the Interstate 4 new?
No, I haven't actually added anything for a while.
Oh.
Let's see. What's the newest? The newest thing? I don't remember. The Saddle Aquarium pin is new. Can you find that?
Did I see that right? Is your Chiron really just a sign that sits in front of the camera?
Nobody realizes that's what it is until I reach up in front of it, and then they
look at this 3D move he's got going here.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
because the Googles broke the regular one.
Doing some work in a television studio, I'm a bit surprised by how simple that is. You know, we use a $100,000 piece of hardware, and you use a stick.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little more than just a stick.
It is in a beer bottle. We in Lederhosen.
Oh, there you go. And it's got Lederhosen. You can't beat a stick with Lederhosen.
I have. Let's see. Hang on. Hold that thought a second.
Okay. Wait. He said thought, not breath.
Oh, well, I'm an airhead. It's all the same.
Okay. Oh, I love that. Hey, let's do a couple more FATAS items while we're waiting for him. Keats says, still logging my finds from Nova Scotia. Saw a porcupine and managed to find GC Bravo Bravo Alpha, which is Canada's first geocache.
Can't take him anywhere.
He posted a great video of finding it as well. It was very cool watching.
He was the 700 favorite pointer.
Ooh. Don't hear that every day.
No.
So he was first to find at 700.
Yeah. He's the first 700. No, to put a favorite.
He was the first 700th favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also said, I taught a whole bunch of my coworkers about geocaching today in Pacific Spirit Park. I may have recruited a few new cachers.
There you go.
You know, and it's so easy now with a decent smartphone app. Here, download this. It doesn't cost you anything. You've already got the smartphone. And off you go.
It's really just about finding the right spot, I think, where there's a number of non-premium caches that are perhaps, you know, a little bit more than a pill bottle.
Right.
And, you know, being able to take people out for four or five of those. So much fun. So easy to get people hooked. And that's great to see Keats out there with his coworkers.
You know, something that's easy and you don't have to get a plane ticket to Utah. I found this great sport. Come on, let's go get a plane ticket to Utah. You're going to enjoy this.
Normally, if somebody said a great sport in Utah, I'd be like, huh?
It's got to involve skiing, right?
Yeah, skiing or movies, I suppose.
Oh, there you go.
A film festival out there.
Yes, there is. Do they water ski on the Great Salt Lake?
I don't know. But, I, you know, dinosaur hunting, that's almost like geocaching. Yes.
Yes, it is.
A lot of dinosaur places there, right?
Well, and the challenge is finding the coordinates. Because the dinosaurs didn't register where they died on a website.
Yeah, well.
Well, that's just rude of the dinosaurs.
Exactly.
Selective availability hadn't been switched off yet. So.
Oh, okay. So we know they're in an area like the size of Utah.
Yeah.
That's like the caches of a few people around here, I won't mention. Yeah.
It's
you know the caches are here. It's just somewhere within the area of the size of Utah. No, there are a lot of dinosaurs down there. They've actually got a pretty cool dinosaur museum down there between Salt Lake and Provo. It's kind of funky.
Did you have you gone there to do enough geocaches to get your patches and your coins?
Sadly, at the time, I was a muggle.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, well.
So it would have been probably before back. The patches and the... Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, if you like having a drink with dinner, you have to do some research before going to Provo.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? They have a bunch of drinks there? No, it's not that way at all, is it?
No, it's exactly the opposite.
Yeah. Yes.
It can actually be hard to walk into a restaurant and order a beer.
Talk about prohibition.
Prohibition. Yeah, not really, not straight outright prohibition, but...
It's prohibition.
A lot of what they call family restaurants down there.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful place. And I ended up driving between Provo and Salt Lake City 4 or 5 times while I was down there. It's quite a beautiful, beautiful drive. And the dinosaur museum is quite cool.
Nice. Nice.
Okay. So you mentioned that my stand here in the Lederhosen, these are still new in package. These are my wind up hopping Lederhosen. So
there we go. That looks like you on the cover.
Pretty much. Yeah, here he is in the back.
Oh, that is definitely you.
Yeah.
I'm Prost der Lederhosen. Prost.
So there you go.
My German is not so good.
It's not quite the yodeling pickle. That's over there too, but I'll spare you Sprecking that tonight.
Oh, the yodeling pickle.
Yeah.
That's a very German thing. And it doesn't have to be.
German or Austrian. Let's not go there. So much more, any more that you've got in FATAS?
I don't think so. Hold on. I have to search to make sure.
The research department should let you know here momentarily.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. If there was any questions about Lua.
Nope, that was it.
Any of that kind of stuff, happy to talk about it. But just as happy talking about dinosaurs and beer as well. So.
Yeah. Dinosaurs and lack of drinking.
Yeah, you could. It wasn't impossible. You just have to be careful. I remember the first night I got in there and navigated into a restaurant and, you know, ordered dinner and a beer, and they're looking at me funny, like, we don't serve alcohol here. What?
Why not?
Well, I figured that out pretty quick, but that situation was more common than I would have expected.
Interesting. Well, Wits End, you just joined us, but I think it's time to close this episode. We've reached 10 o'clock local time. And any later, I turn into a pumpkin.
Yeah, it's not pretty. I've seen it. So yeah, folks, I know it was brief, but I'm glad I could at least pop in. So
we are very thankful to have you. You're welcome anytime. And Kevin, thank you again for coming on. We didn't get to the Loa class, but stay tuned. Maybe we'll do that the next after show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll come up with a better quiz.
Oh, there you go. Until next week, get out and get caching in the Northwest.
Thanks, everybody. Good